listen to my daddy and my Uncle Jay. Not in a creepy way.
I'm lacking eloquence. Here's the thing that I had the thing with the thing about.
I wonder who the bitchy woman was.
You're a bad person.
So she slips in the back door. I am slipperier than you, and I don't cock it up.
Lady. Oh no.
You'll end up with your balls in your mouth?
Awkward. I did not see that kind.
So boring. So pedestrian.
That's okay. I like this podcast.
Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2005 Shane Black movie, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Now this stars Robert Downey Jr. as Harold Harry Lockhart and Val Kilmer as Perry, Gay Perry, Van Shrike. Although I'm not even sure he says his last name in the whole movie.
They say his name.
Yeah, but it's basically the Harry and Perry story, more or less. So, Shane Black, I recognized the name, but I didn't realize what his story was until I did a little digging for this episode. He wrote Lethal Weapon. That's his big claim to fame.
Oh, wow.
He co-wrote The Monster Squad. He then, because of the success, he was paid $250,000 for Lethal Weapon, which grossed like $500 million or something. Some crazy number like that. Maybe $300 million. So he ended up selling, I think, The Last Boy Scout for like $1.7 million. The Last Action Hero for like over $1 million. And then The Long Kiss Goodnight for $4 million.
Wow.
Yeah, he was the young, he was in his 20s when he sold Lethal Weapon. He was just out of film school or college of some kind. And so he was like the young phenom. But after Lethal Weapon, a bunch of the movies bombed, and that was kind of a problem. I think he sucked the air out of a lot of the high-paid advances. Especially since The Long Kiss Goodnight didn't do well in the box office. But I'll submit that that's on my list. I mean, that's a good movie. Are you familiar?
I don't know that I've ever seen it. So.
Oh, it's so much fun. Gina Davis, it's great. He also wrote and directed Iron Man 3, which was considered a good Iron Man movie, at least.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's on the list.
Yeah. Nope, I haven't seen it either. But working with Downey is always probably fun. Because much like, I would compare him to David Mamet. He writes dialogue really, really well. And that's the beauty of this movie.
Yeah, I think that's one of my most favorite things about this movie. Is that, because even though I've seen it countless times, because to me this is my Christmas movie. Because, it's largely a movie about, it's not about Christmas, but it's set around Christmas, and events happen around Christmas. And so, to me, it's kind of my quintessential Christmas movie. Because I'm not a Christmassy movie kind of guy. I'm not the George Bailey, It's a Wonderful Life Christmas movie, and I'm not the Dickens kind of Scrooge movie, although, Scrooged was okay. But to me, this is one I like to watch it around Christmas time because it's kind of got that Christmas theme.
Did you guys talk about Shane Black's fetish for Christmas?
No. No, in fact, you talk about it. Tell me about Shane Black's fetish for Christmas. We talked about that it was a Christmas movie.
All the movies that he writes are take place in Christmas.
Was Lethal Weapon Christmas?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't remember.
Lethal Weapon started off with Jingle Bell Rock.
Oh, well, see, I haven't seen it recently enough. That's good to know. No, we didn't talk about that at all.
He somehow managed to talk Marvel into making Iron Man 3 a Christmas movie.
That is wild. And wait, hold on. What am I smelling? I'm smelling bonus material. Or maybe not. I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I had no idea. So, I did not know that. No, Jason talked about this as a movie that he considers his Christmas movie, the way I kind of consider Die Hard a Christmas movie. That you can watch every Christmas. But I didn't realize that Lethal Weapon should be on that list.
Yeah. And I think about any Shane Black movie.
So
the Christmas movie.
I remember Long Kiss Goodnight being winter, but I don't remember it being Christmas. Wait, I do remember it.
Yeah.
She was wearing Christmas sweaters and stuff.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. That is fascinating. How did I not bump into that? Do you know any explanation about why he likes Christmas movies or what that's about?
I do not know. No.
Huh. Well, that's fascinating.
I'm looking up his writing credits.
Well,
Monster Squad, I don't remember if that was set around Christmas or not.
Yeah, and he kind of co-wrote that, I think, too.
Maybe. Last Boy Scout, that's an underrated movie.
Yeah, we were talking about maybe we should revisit that movie because I remember it being good. I just don't remember anything special about it.
It has a connection to Beverly Hills Cop, Damon Wayans.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But it has some layers of dialogue that I didn't get the first couple of times I watched the movie, and then now that I've seen it as many times, I still laugh like a stupid child. It's hilarious still. So I think it is very well written. It's got some stupid parts, stupid humor, but it's got some really smart jokes that are seemingly like some that are subtle enough that you just might not get if you're not from the right generation.
And then some that are just batshit crazy, but
absolutely.
I totally agree. It's totally a Christmas movie. It starts and ends with Christmas theme, and I would list it right up with Die Hard, which is also a Christmas movie. Because it takes place in Christmas. I mean, I would definitely watch this and Die Hard in a row anytime.
Sure.
And this is not necessarily, I guess it's like a black comedy, but it's a noir movie. I mean, it is a love letter to noir films. Although I guess Shane Black,
Dark.
Well, I guess Shane Black isn't necessarily a big fan of, like, say, Sam Spade, the Dashiell Hammett books, or like The Big Sleep, that kind of thing. But he did read a lot of Raymond Chandler going into this, and that's why the days all have names that are Raymond Chandler novels or stories. And it really takes that whole Hammett, Chandler, noir thing. It takes that whole convention and it really works with it in a really nice way. You know, a lot of the dialogue is noir dialogue, but also a lot of the subject matter, you know, the fact that it deals with themes of, you know, it's all about, you know, murder and characters who are not necessarily heroic. I mean, all the characters are broken and have had some bad things happen to them. That's all straight out of Chandler and Hammett. You know, you look at something like The Big Sleep, and there's some funky stuff going on with all those characters. Anyway.
Yeah, there's no real good guy in this movie.
No, not at all.
There are better guys and worse guys, but there's no good guy in this movie, which is fine. But, you know, I didn't like how it was written because the movie's written in parts, and so you have, you know, day one, day two, day. So it's a very kind of structured movie, but when you watch it, it's all tied together. And to me, it's fun having gone back and rewatched it as many times as I have to see those parts early on in the movie where you're like, oh, that's where this ties together. So I love those kind of Easter eggs.
Well, and I like the fact that this is a narrated movie. Robert Downey as Harry is also the narrator of the story. And
Yes. Like
a Tarantino movie, for instance, it jumps around in time because the narrator remembers, oh, I forgot to tell you about this part, and then he goes back to it. And there's some funny things he says about movies with narration and how it doesn't always work very well. And that's all just sort of inside fun jokes.
Yeah, no, I love that he breaks down the fourth wall, and he's you know, he's funny about it, but he's also like, I'm the shittiest narrator ever, but, you know, that's what you got. It's too bad.
Oh, yeah, and he's making fun of the movies as well as, you know, being part of it. So it's great. So do we want to cover the plot?
So the movie opens with the young Harry and the young Harmony. Which is, when I first saw this movie, I did a Pulp Fiction with the chainsaw.
Oh yeah, that was just a fun little thing.
Yeah, because I, of course, you know, I, like probably everybody else, was duped into thinking, you know, because that little girl had a convincing scream.
Well, yeah, it opens with some sort of country fair, and the young Harry is Harold the Amazing, or the Amazing Harold, or Harold the Great.
Harold the Great.
Oh, I'm sorry. He was Harold the Great. That was very important.
Yes.
And he was a magician, and his assistant was this little girl, and she was in a box, and he had another assistant with a chainsaw going to cut her in half. And she lets out a terrifying scream, and everybody runs, and then they open the box to find out that she has not been cut. She just looks at them and says, "I'm going to be an actress." And then it cuts to a holiday party, like a Christmas-type party, just before a screen test for a movie that Harry's going to be taking the test for.
Right.
And then he goes back.
But then, then it jumps backwards to how he got the screen test.
And he got the screen test because he is a petty thief and a burglar, not a very good burglar. And during a burglary, a witness shot at him, killed his partner, or at least shot his partner. And while fleeing from the police and presumably the person with the gun, he ends up stumbling into a casting session for a movie. And they give him a script.
Having been shot himself, by the way.
Yes, yes, he has been shot also. And he just happens to be given the script for this sort of noir kind of movie where he plays a guy whose partner was killed in the commission of a crime. So it's all very, they think he's a method actor, and really he's just reliving what just happened to him. Now, did you?
And that's where you meet Larry Miller.
Exactly. I love Larry Miller.
Me too.
He's just fantastic. Now, is he the casting director or the director of the movie? It doesn't actually matter.
I think he's the casting guy.
Yeah. But I always love to see Larry Miller. He's just fun. And his name is...
And he plays a good lech and a good bastard.
Oh, yeah. And I love that his name in the movie is Dabney. It's Dabney Shaw. It's like, how many people named Dabney are there? So
there's only one, Dabney Coleman.
Exactly. to cav off slightly... I also thought of deciding to, we're just going to play the Jackie Cation game because, of course, Dabney Coleman is a poor man's Gene Hackman. So we might play the rich man, poor man, although I don't have any for this movie necessarily. But just keep that in mind.
Okay. Like, and I have a brief segue. Speaking of Gene Hackman, I had the fortune and Derek's misfortune of torturing him with the Kevin Costner Gene Hackman flick No Way Out the other day.
I think I have a borrowed copy that I have not returned nor watched of No Way Out. Doesn't it have Sean Young in it?
Yes.
Okay. There's like a famous sex scene with Sean Young and Kevin Costner?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I'm sure that's not the highlight of the movie, but...
It's a great, terrible movie. I would watch it, but it's terrible. So.
The other thing, since we're on a tangent, is did you know Malice is available in full on YouTube?
I did not know that.
I have transferred it to my tablet for viewing offline, and so we can actually do the movie.
All right.
Because I'll be able to see it. I don't know if you have a copy of it, but.
I do not have a copy of it, but I will rewatch it on YouTube.
Yeah, because it's not available on DVD in America. There's some issue with it, but yeah, it's not available. Oh. So it's nice that it's on YouTube.
Okay, well, excellent.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we'll go back to the story. This is how you get introduced to Harry. Harry's our narrator. Harry's at this party, and at this party. He meets a private investigator named Perry, known widely as Gay Perry, because he's gay. And because Gay Perry is a hilarious little...
But he's introduced to the private investigator because the whole point of him is that this is the protege actor. Harry's going to be the protege, and Dabney wants him to learn some pieces of skill so that he can add that to his method and his art so that he can be the good actor for the film that Dabney's ostensibly recruiting him for.
Exactly. So he's put together with Perry on purpose.
Right.
But before that, he... the other characters introduced at the party are the film producer, who used to be a film actor, Harlan Dexter, who's played by
right.
Corbin Burnson.
Who, like, where did that casting call come from?
You don't think he was a good choice?
No, I do. I would have never pegged him in a million years to have been, I mean... Who knew Corbin Burnson was around and still acting in other than strange television roles?
Hold on. I have an answer to that question, as a matter of fact. And I didn't realize until you just said it now. I think this was his production company's first movie they produced. I mean, he literally is the producer of this movie as well as the producer in the movie.
Well, that makes it very convenient, doesn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. And also, he's one of the actors that... they can use footage from his early days in real, you know, use actual footage when he had hair and all. They can insert for, you know, plot reasons in the movie.
The early picture with him in the glasses and the hair and oy, oy, oy.
It's awesome.
Because I think most recently I've seen Corbin Burnson in the TV series Psych, where he plays, you know, the crazy dad.
Yeah, and I haven't seen Psych, so. But Corbin Burnson
you're fine.
Well, no, I mean, Corbin Burnson is a, you know, he's an actor that I recognize from many things in my childhood, as, you know, from L.A. Law to the Major League movies and that kind of stuff. So I'm always happy to see him.
Right.
And seeing him together with Larry Miller is a treat.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, Larry David, on the other hand, that'd be a totally different kind of movie. So then we encounter the grown-up Harmony Lane. At first, Harry does not realize this is the little girl that he knew when he was a child. He just thinks that she's an attractive model, or not model, actress.
Aspiring actress.
Aspiring actress, yes. And the first peek into Harry's character, even though he's a thief, is he has a moral compass, is that Harmony discovers a set of like pulp crime novels that she fell in love with as a child in this producer's Johnny Gossamer novels. She ends up flipping through them until she falls asleep in one of the rooms in the producer's house, and this lecherous agent kind of guy comes and is copping a feel of her while she's asleep. And in a very convincing noir, I guess it's noir patois, Harry basically tells the guy to see if I have it actually here. No, I don't think so, because it was rather long. But, you know, he basically tells him to split, to leave, just to walk away. And the guy's like, who are you? You know, I'll kick your ass. And he's like, that's not going to go very well. It will end in tears. So, and once again, for the cheap seats, take a walk. And then it cuts to him, Harry, getting his ass kicked by this agent guy.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. And then Harmony leaving with the agent guy.
Yeah, it turns out because she was the guy she went to the party with.
Yeah, which is, hysterical. So,
which is where he and Val Kilmer have this moment. There are many, many moments in this movie of dialogue that are just like this, where the dialogue furthers the story, but also has a great deal of dialogue that has no sense to it. And I think that's on purpose to be funny, which I found hilarious.
So, do you have any of this dialogue in front of you?
I have, well, not all of it directly.
No, I know. I just wondered how, because I have some of it, but I've got an observation to throw out here.
Okay.
So the Harry character, right? Robert Downey Jr. He plays this very, very well, because if let's do a little bit of stunt casting. His character could have been sort of a hapless guy who got caught up in all of these shenanigans going around him. Like, if you cast Ben Stiller, then he just would have been, you know, the Meet the Falkers guy who just stumbles upon all these other wacky things that he has no knowledge about, and, you know, stumbles his way in the right direction through the whole movie.
That would have been a horrible movie.
Oh, it would have been a horrible movie. Because Harry is not that character. Harry is over his head, but Harry also considers himself something of a player and something of a, like, a wordsmith, maybe is the wrong term. He considers himself very quippy. And that's where the fun is, when you get Harry and Perry together.
Right.
Because Harry thinks he's, you know, the snappy patter guy. Then he meets Perry, who is the snappy patter guy.
Yeah, Perry knocks him down every time that he tries to set something up.
Exactly.
And it is awesome and hilarious. And I don't know, but I hope Val Kilmer's like that in real life.
I hope so too. I think perhaps not, but I hope so. It would have been
That's how I imagine Val Kilmer at home on the weekends, is making those little quips.
I did not get a chance to watch it, but I heard or read an article reviewing the commentary track on the DVD, which is a strange thing that exists. There's a guy who has a blog there where he talks just about the commentary tracks on DVDs.
That's interesting.
But apparently it was Shane Black, Robert Downey Jr., and Val Kilmer who were doing the commentary. And they set the ground rules that everybody who was listening to the commentary track had seen the movie 3 or more times, so talking about the plot wouldn't help anybody. And so early in the thing, Val Kilmer says, "I'm going to drop a lot of names. In fact, I will be dropping more names than any of you gentlemen. So I will give you $500 if you can drop more names than I will." Because as they're telling stories, you know. But yeah. I guess there was also a little bit of jabbing back and forth that Robert Downey was talking about how Val Kilmer had to have his lines all over. Like, he was reading his lines all the time. In fact, at the there's a scene where Val Kilmer and Harry and Perry are interrogating the orderly from the hospital. And apparently Val Kilmer had them make cue cards for that scene. Although he claims not to have used them. But still.
Well, maybe he's a kinesthetic learner.
Perhaps, yeah. But it doesn't matter, because he delivers his lines so well. Now,
I think because this movie was, in addition to, this movie was well acted.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
I don't know that any of it was really over the top as much as the whole movie was over the top, but, you know, it was really well acted, and all of them did it was a great job. Watching the gag reel, because I have the DVD, watching the gag reel is hilarious, too, because you get to see, you know, it's clear that Val Kilmer and Robert Downey Jr. like working together. They seem to be pals, so.
Yeah, exactly. And that comes across, because even though the characters are, for parts of the movie, I mean, they are reluctant partners, and there's some animosity between them, although it turns out there's plenty of animosity between all the characters in the show, which is great. And I didn't mention
Val Kilmer, Gay Perry has a great deal of contempt for, I think, just about everybody.
Exactly. And especially somebody, he's basically being paid to have a guy shadow him to watch what he does. And he doesn't think very highly of that, I don't think.
Well, and one of my observations of the movie in a whole was that it was set in L.A. in Hollywood, and you get repeatedly, you're just kind of kicked in the balls about, you know, how disconnected and how people just don't care. Because you see Robert Downey Jr. have incidents where people just, like, they'll have a sentence interaction and then they're like, nope, I'm done with you. You know, because it started at the pool at the beginning of the scene where he starts to smoke and they all walk away from him with nothing but contempt. Because, of course, you know, people don't smoke in L.A. anymore. And then the one chick who, you know, asked him what he did for a living, and he told her, and she goes, oh, that's nice, and walked away, and he goes, that's it? And she goes, yep, that's it.
Yeah, that was where he asked her, and I believe that the quote was that he invented dice when he was young.
Yes.
Yeah. And, that was Flicka, wasn't it?
I don't think that was Flicka.
Oh.
It might have been Flicka.
It was either Flicka or it was a hostess at the same club.
Yeah, it was okay, but there was lots of little jokes like that, you know, my friend Flicka, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes, and of course I don't have the main one, that you had in what Facebook message form. One of the great non sequiturs within the whole thing is.
She had something about that gal tonight, this quality. You know, like the girl from high school, the one that got away, that, you know what I mean, that haunts you still.
Yeah, I had that.
You did?
Bobby Mills.
Huh. Well, maybe you should try to get in touch with him. I got $5, says you could still get him.
Really? That's funny. I got a 10, says Pass the Pepper. I got 2 quarters, Sing Harmony on Moonlight in Vermont.
What?
Talking money.
A talking monkey?
Talking monkey, yeah. Yeah, came here from the future. Ugly sucker, only says ficus. Detective lessons tomorrow. Don't forget.
Okay.
Harmony Lane is played by Michelle Monaghan, and Michelle Monaghan was in Source Code, remember?
Was she?
She was the girl on the train.
Oh, I hated that movie so much.
Yeah, it's okay. It's our least popular episode of the podcast.
Deservedly.
No, it's okay. It's fine. We were finding our feet, right? Wasn't it episode number 1?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Well, if it wasn't 1, it was like 3.
I can only find part of the quote, which is where Harry says, "What?" And Gay Perry says, "Talking money." And Harry says, "A talking monkey." And Gay Perry says, "Talking monkey, yeah, yeah. Came here from the future. Ugly sucker. Only says ficus." You know, the whole movie's full of great quotes like that.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? I won't even find it. It'll be fine. Maybe I'll put a a clip of it on the website. So,
yeah, or maybe the people listening, if they think it's funny, should go watch the movie.
Oh, no, definitely. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, because we're going to spoil... we may not even spoil the whole plot, but again, the plot isn't as important as the ride you take, because the dialogue is so clever, and what happens, how they react to it, is so funny.
Well, because Harry chronically puts his foot in his mouth.
Well, exactly, because he thinks, well, there's a little bit of setup that I'll give you. He actually goes to a bar early on where he tries to actually reconnect with Harmony. And this is where later in the bar scene, he finds out that she's the girl in the box. She's known this all along, but he doesn't. So he's trying to hit on her, and she is shutting him down. And like he tries to go up and talk to her, buy her a drink, and she suggests he goes and talks to, you know, somebody else in the bar, and points to these group of people. And one of them, or he says, "Oh, like the blonde?" He goes, no, not her. And he says, "Why not her?" And she goes, "Well, for starters, she's been fucked more times than she's had a hot meal." And then Harry immediately comes back with, "Yeah, I heard about that. It was neck and neck," and then she skipped lunch.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful little quippy thing. But then later down the road.
The bar game is hilarious too, though.
Oh, yeah. The bar game is hilarious. Where they describe fellow bar patrons as alternate race celebrities. Like their celebrity lookalikes.
I.e. the Native American Joe Pesci. Yeah, and by the way, that's a game that we replicate when we go out.
It sounds like a hilarious game.
It is a hilarious game.
I mean, if you can keep it up.
No. It's a game that should be played many places, but never play with yourself. So.
Ultimately, it's not quite as... You know, it may get the job done, but ultimately it's not quite as satisfying.
But not in a creepy way.
Okay, so here's a little bit of language that I love in this. So at that bar, not only does Harry get shut down by Harmony, but also Harmony's sort of rough-looking friend. And
yeah,
so he tells him, "Well, clearly I'm interrupting. I feel badly. Well, what are you drinking?" And then Harmony says, "Bad." He goes, "Bad? Sorry, you feel bad." "Bad? Bad is an adverb. So you say you feel badly, but like saying the mechanism which allows you to feel is broken." Okay? That line is just nothing. I mean, it's just in the bar. It's like, you know, silly, patter, whatever. And the funny part of the rest of the scene is that she then tells him that, oh, by the way, she's the girl from way back and everything. So they have a great time. But then he wakes up the next morning, in bed, but he's in bed with the friend, not her.
Yeah, he humped it out with her friend.
Yeah. Well, then once Perry and Harry get into they actually find it's the lady in the lake scene. they have a lot of squabbling between them two, and then Perry drops off Harry at the hotel. And this time they've been sniping at each other, and Perry says, "Go. Sleep badly. Any questions, hesitate to call." Harry says, "Bad." Perry goes, "Excuse me?" Harry says, "Sleep bad. Otherwise, it makes it seem like the mechanism that allows you to sleep." Perry says, "What, fuckhead? Who taught you grammar? Badly's the adverb. Get out. Vanish." So Harry, at every turn, Harry is not quite as glib as he thinks he is.
Right, and Perry knocks him down every time.
Oh, yeah. No, Perry is great. Perry is who you want to be in the movie.
Yeah. I actually want to be Perry's sidekick.
Just generally?
Yeah, no, awesome. I mean, I can't imagine a better job.
Well, Perry likes it now that he's gotten it toward, spoiler alert. So I don't even know if we need to necessarily go into all the machinations of the plot, except that
no,
some of the...
There's some hilarious parts of the movie, but the plot's kind of unimportant because on the scheme of things, you have to see the movie as a whole to get it, for it to be funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are some silly moments, like when he discovers a body in the hotel room and then he accidentally, because he discovers it while he's urinating, and then he turns actually, and pees on the body.
I wrote that down on my piece of paper, dead body pee.
Oh, it's hysterical. And then when he calls Perry.
But, again, they gave her back.
Yes, she's in my shower. I'm looking at her, for Christ's sake.
That's impossible. They don't even know you. They couldn't possibly.
No, they couldn't. You're right. And since the body can't be here and this is all a dream, and oh, look, there's Alma the elf. Good morning, Alma. What's in your basket?
Shut up. How did they get in?
I don't know. I mean, how am I supposed to know how they got in? Fire escape, maybe?
Okay, first things first. We got to move her somewhere. You got gloves?
Excuse me?
Gloves. Do you have gloves? You have to move her. If it's a frame-up, some asshole's probably calling the cops on you right now. Do this. Wrap up the body in a blanket, a sheet, anything.
Okay. Any particular kind of gloves?
Yes. Fawn. Will you fucking hurry?
Perry.
Yeah?
I peed on it.
What? What? You peed on what?
I peed on the corpse. Can they do, like, ID from that?
I'm sorry. You peed on...
On the corpse. And my question is...
No, my question. I get to go first. Why in perfect hell would you pee on a corpse?
I didn't intend to. It's not like I did it for kicks. God, this isn't happening. You said this doesn't happen. This is your fault.
Shut up and listen. First, you have to wrap the body.
Okay.
Second, you've got to find the gun. Say this with me. Find the gun.
Find the gun. Find the gun. Oh, did I throw it in the lake?
Not my gun, idiot. They dropped the body into it's a frame-up. Then they also have planted a gun. Trust me. Move it. I'll be there in 4 minutes.
But then...
But you get to see both sides of that, because you could totally understand my... Val Kilmer, the Perry character on the phone, would be like, why would you do that? And the Harry guy, like, I'm trying to explain to you why I did this. Look, I didn't do it just to do it. Like, so you understand both sides of that conversation, but they're both equally hilarious.
Oh, it's all potentially could happen, you know? In fact, except for the scene with the dog, I think most everything in this movie could happen. Well, okay, there's also the scene with the casket, but I love the fact that early on in the movie, Harmony accidentally cuts off one of Harry's fingers in a door.
which, by the way, was, like, gruesome and horrible and horrifying and hilarious. But I, like, Derek actually had a visceral response to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's also, none of it contributes to the plot necessarily. Although theoretically they use the finger being amputated as a way to get him to one location in the story. But really it's just great character for Harry.
Yeah. I wrote down finger as well in capital letters with an exclamation mark. Yeah. The finger thing was just like, when you watch it, I think the first time when you watch, you don't realize that his finger is removed. And then, you know, that whole scene where they're having the argument and then it goes from they're arguing and, like, I just, you know, could you pick up my finger? I don't want to look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can you put it on ice for me? Because I think, yeah. And then they have to go get it stitched on. And that was all very visceral.
No. It was, you know, it was gritty and it was horrible and just what you wanted. But the other one of the greatest things is the whole spider boob scene.
Absolutely. Go ahead and describe that scene.
because you feel bad for Harry, because you know Harry, because I think the overwhelming sense of this movie is Harry wants to be a good guy. He's just bad at it. And so he wants to be that good guy, but he just, something, some, you know, the mechanism in him works badly.
Oh, yeah. So, well, and we actually, we've, to interrupt you, but we, you know, we, I pointed out in the very beginning, he has, he thought he was saving Harmony from a lecherous guy. So he's now established himself as something of a gentleman when it comes to the ladies. And he actually had a speech.
He does that by sleeping with her friend.
Well, yeah. Although in the bar, I think he has a speech about it. Or maybe it was after that. Maybe it was during the spider thing. Yeah, I think that was probably during the spider thing, where he has a whole speech about how all the ladies in L.A. are broken.
Well, and also what he said, and I wrote down this quote, pitying someone and trying to fuck them gets all messed up in his head.
Yeah. So,
which is kind of his, theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And he wants to get the girl. And actually, Harmony is no saint. She's not an angel in this story. Like,
no.
One of the things that, you know, she's part of the reason she's the one that got away is he was like her really, really good friend all through high school. And she slept with pretty much everybody else except for his best friend. And that was only because that they had talked about it and said that you know, out of respect for him, she wouldn't sleep with his best friend. So, and of course, she has a troubled past because her father has been molesting her sister, and that she's gone to L.A. to Hollywood to make it rich to provide for her sister and move her out. And the reason she's so upset at one point when it comes to him is because her sister has ended up killing herself because she's come out to Hollywood.
She refuses to believe it's a suicide.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the whole, that's the whole case. And that's the case that Harry has taken, even though Perry has to tell Harry on several occasions, you are not a private investigator. You don't have any cases.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted. Explain the spider scene, because it's pretty fun.
Well, because, you know, she comes to the hotel room, and she's exhausted, and, you know, she's kind of, she just needs to sleep, and she's worn out, and, you know, she kind of passes out. So he lays her in the bed, and he does the nice thing of, you know, he's gentlemanly trying to take her clothes off of her, you know, because it's kind of hilarious because he's kind of taking her sash off of her, but he's looking away when he's trying to do it. But then, you know, as he turns around, you know, there's a spider crawling down her chest, which, by the way, I'm sure I screamed.
It's a good spider too.
Yeah, no. I don't know what they did. I don't know if it was real. I don't know. But it was ick.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't like an over-the-top tarantula, but it was a long-legged, nasty spider.
Yeah, no, it was totally believable. But then, of course, you know, he's basically trying to get it to come out, but instead he ends up flapping her boob to try and either coax it out or kill it, which, of course, she wakes up in the middle of, and she's like, you know, for God's sakes, what are you doing? And he's like, there's a spider. And she's like, come on, you know. But they have a little tiff over it because she's like, if you just, you know, just whatever, just grab them. And that's the whole conversation where he's like, no, it's not okay just to grab them. It's not an okay thing. I didn't do it. I don't want you to think I did it because I'm not that kind of person. I didn't do it to do it. I did it because there was a spider. And, of course, as it turns out, she finds the spider, which was equally as horrible because then there's this spider leg on her.
Yeah, she finds just a single leg of the spider.
Ugh.
So it's pretty great. So it's like, oh, a charming thing, but it gives him a launching point to go a rant about how it's like all the people if you took all the women on the East Coast and just shook the East Coast, all the broken women would fall down to the West Coast, and that's what you're left with.
I thought that was a great line, by the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the speeches and the dialogue in this movie is just so good. And, like, in fact, during the Lady in the Lake thing, Harry ends up throwing Perry's gun into the lake.
This is bad, Perry. We gotta go. We gotta roll out of here before the cops come. Come on,
Nix. We go right to the cops.
Oh, exactly, to the cops, who'll have no trouble believing that she broke her neck before you shot her in the head.
What? Come on, we gotta go.
Oh, God.
We gotta go.
Oh, God.
Go, go, go.
Oh, God. All right, we're out of here.
Gotta go.
Okay.
Yeah,
where's my gun?
I, no, I,
Give me my gun.
No, I got rid of it.
Say again?
Yeah, I threw it in the lake because I figured you wouldn't, I would. I got priors in New York, so I really can't. I can't be messing around.
You threw it away.
Yeah, plus it's evidence.
You what?
Watch it.
Okay. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got a little nonplussed there.
Okay, it's this cool. Is crazy. I understand. No, just relax.
Whoa, what is that? Is that a clue?
What do you mean?
Do you see that?
In the thing?
Can you? Ow! What were you thinking? My $2,000 ceramic Vector my mother got me as a special gift? You threw in the lake next to the car. What happens when they drag the lake? You think they'll find my pistol? Jesus. Look up idiot in the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
A picture of me?
No! The definition of the word idiot, which you fucking are.
I mean, there's so many, like, one of the lines I love is, at a particularly bitter moment. Actually, I think it's after the speech. Before they get tortured? I don't know. They're parting ways. And Perry's like, Merry Christmas. Sorry I fucked you over. And Harry's like, no problem. Don't quit your gay job.
Yeah, that was a great line.
Yeah.
You know, but then there's that whole, that whole where he's, you know, they're in the back at the mental institute and he takes all the bullets out of the gun and ends up shooting the guy. And it's like,
I don't know anything about a girl. Seriously. I was bluffing.
I think that you are bluffing right now.
Harry, what are you doing?
Well, what I'm doing for the guy who likes to bluff is I'm playing a little game called Am I Bluffing? Huh? Where is she? Where the fuck is Harmony?
Harry.
Want to play hardball? I can do that. Where is the girl?
What did you just do?
I put in one bullet, didn't I?
You put a live round in that gun.
Oh, well, yeah. There was like an 8% chance.
8%?
Wasn't it just 8?
8?
Yeah.
Who taught you math?
More.
I think when we watched that the first time it was Travis and Derek, and I think Travis and I actually couldn't get enough air to breathe.
Oh, it's just so funny. I mean, the exasperation by both these guys at different times is just so fun. Because there are things that exasperate them several times. I mean, not the least of which is the fact that not only does he get his finger cut off and then reattached, but then he gets he ends up having it come off again, and then a dog eats it. So it's all very sad for his finger. What about Mr. Fire and Mr. Mustard?
This is ridiculous, but not unrealistic.
Well, they do this. These two guys are the killers, and they're doing this sort of good cop, bad cop thing with Harry, and they make this joke about Ike and Mike and Mustard. And Harry's like, what does that even mean? And the other guy's like, yeah, that's a little obscure, you know, even for me. No, I hear that phrase all the time. Like, where? In Club 1942? Well, you're just mad because you couldn't get in. And that time Harry tries to leave. But there's so many funny little things. Like, okay, I've got a question for you, and this is a slight spoiler. But, you know, Harmony, one of her claim to fames is, or one of her only acting gigs she's got, is these ads for Gennaro's beer.
Right.
And the tagline is, I'm for Gennaro, the bear, the animated bear, says, I'm for Gennaro's, but then, what do I know? I'm a bear. I suck the heads off of fish. Which is, of course, the greatest line in advertising, of course. At the end, you see an ad for Gennaro's beer, where I think it's the girl who's had been fucked more times than has had hot meals, as the girl.
I think so.
So, does that mean that Harmony never had that part and she was just sort of embellishing her career?
No, I think it was just that it was kind of commentary that she never gets a part and, you know, that she's washed up because she's 35, Harmony's 34.
She gets the part at the end, the 35-year-old.
Yeah, but she was in a parka and Harmony was in a dirndl. There were different ads, and don't ask why I know that.
Okay, I don't even know what that second thing you said was, so.
A dirndl?
Yeah, what is that like?
It's a traditional German Bavarian dress.
To like the men would be wearing lederhosen?
And correct. Lederhosen would be the male equivalent. So you have lederhosen and you have dirndl.
Excellent.
And the dirndl is what the women wear and the lederhosen what the men wear. And that's kind of the traditional Bavarian beer garb when they're at the beer garden and you're having your Oktoberfest.
See, and that's what I've been saying all along, you people. You don't understand. This is an educational podcast. This you're going to get to learn on right here, man.
I just taught you about alcoholic German culture.
You should be getting continuing education credits just for listening, okay? You're welcome, people. It's a free podcast.
Lobby your respective credentialing agencies.
Yes, so send us some feedback because we're providing a service to you for free. Did I mention for free? except if you buy the apps located on the Amazon.
Which will give you bonus material.
Yes, bonus material where we'll recreate the greatest scenes of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I wonder, well, I can't do it in German, but you could probably.
I could. It would sound angry and there'd be a lot of spitting.
Well, but it's a podcast, so you wouldn't see the spitting. You'd just hear it.
Yeah, but you would hear it. And after a while, that's not something you want to have over the phone all the time.
Well, I guess. Not in my phone. You can do whatever you want.
I was like, well, I don't know. Well, they are my phones, but yeah, I suppose.
Can we talk trivia about this movie?
Sure.
Okay. Well, actually, there's one more line I had written down. And it's they were talking about, you know, their upbringing. And Perry says, well, how about you, Harry? Did your father love you? And Harry says, sometimes, you know, like when I was dressed up like a bottle. How about yours? And Perry's like, well, he used to beat me in Morse code, so it's possible, but he never actually said the words.
Yeah, I thought that was a really funny, witty line.
Yeah, me too.
If not giving a little sad insight.
Well, yeah, it was a very clever way of saying a very sad tale.
That's that kind of survivor humor that you expect from survivors, that they've coped with it long enough that they make jokes about it now.
Oh, yeah. No, and these people are dealing with gritty situations, as comedic as they are. You know, they're still dealing with, you know, one guy lost a part of his finger. Okay, so trivia time. Did you know, are you familiar with the song by Shirley Bassey, and also Dionne Warwick recorded it too, called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No.
Okay. Well, Kiss Kiss...
I did see your link, but I did not have opportunity to listen.
Well, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang actually was how the James Bond movies were described in an Italian poster for a James Bond film.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's why they came up with the name. Although I think Shane Black's original title was L.A.P.I. Bang. And I think Val Kilmer's the one who talked him into Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because it was a better title.
Yeah. Well, and the other interesting thing of note about the title is to be careful because there's an Indian, Middle Eastern Indian, either TV show or movie that's called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is like a rom-com.
Is it a rom-com with noir elements or is it just...
No. This is like 80s Roseanne.
Oh, that's not good at all. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think it's one of those lost in translation things.
Yeah, it has to be, yeah, because...
It doesn't have to be, but we hope that it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would be like putting up a sitcom in Brazil and calling it Two and a Half Men. And, you know, it being a family show involving, you know, father and or mother, father, three kids, and a sassy nanny. Or something like that. Anyway. Okay, so... I guess Val Kilmer met Robert Downey Jr. for the first time at a Hollywood party. A week later, he received the screenplay for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and agreed to do it before he'd even finished reading it. And then after he agreed to it, he was informed that Robert Downey Jr. had already been cast in it. So that's kind of fun. Also, because Robert Downey Jr., who young people, none of which who listen to the podcast, although I'm telling you, it could be used for school credit. You know, Robert Downey Jr. had a heck of an addiction problem. You know, he by rights, he should not still be an actor in Hollywood. He should be dead somewhere or been on, you know, Dr. Drew's show. But he was in recovery during
rehab.
Yeah, he was in recovery during this. And so in support of his recovery, Val Kilmer refused to drink during the entire production of the show. So Joel Silver, who was, I think, the producer, he noted that the film was originally budgeted at $10 million because Warner Brothers was not confident in the premise. That's the sad part of this movie. Yeah, Joel Silver had it bumped up, or maybe they ran over, and they ended up with a $15 million budgeted movie. But even though Warner Brothers loved it and they opened it in Cannes, they only opened it in like 130-something screens in the U.S.? Like, that's a shame. This is a movie that should have been in wide release.
Oh, yeah. I think it would have done, I mean, had they released it at the right time, you know, that could have very well parlayed into a much more successful movie.
It could have been a series, you know, as much as that's kind of a tired thing also. I'd go on the Harry Perry trip for several more movies.
I would love there to be another movie where they were, like, investigating something else and it was, yeah, no, I agree with you.
Yeah, because at the end of the movie, again, spoilers, Harry is Perry's assistant.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole thing at the very end. So, you know, it's beautiful.
And Val Kilmer apologizes for saying fuck a lot.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. But, yeah, it's, you know, I have nothing bad to say about this movie. This is a fantastic movie. Even, actually, how about the title sequence?
Oh, I love the opening. It was a great opening.
Wasn't it like Casino Royale? It was like those 70s caper kind of movie sequences. It was beautiful.
It's the opening to what you would expect if you were watching a Johnny Gossamer movie.
Well, exactly. And that's the whole thing, is that Johnny Gossamer kind of runs through it. And I don't know. I mean, it's like, again, it's a beautiful thing. There's nothing. This is just a wonderful, wonderful movie.
And I agree. It's a fun movie. It's a funny movie. It's not, it's not like, it's not, I'm not sure what I'm trying, aspiring to say something grandiose and I'm failing miserably. It's not a sophisticated movie, but it's smart and it's hilarious. And it's got enough laughs in it, but it's got enough serious. There's some really dark, dark, serious parts to it. Like where the purple-headed girl gets killed and shot and he's under the bed with her. That's just chilling and kind of sad and horrible.
Yeah, but it's followed by hilarity because a dog eats the rest of his finger.
True.
Just, there's an antidote to that right there. But you're right. I mean, because it's a noir movie and they're true to that, the characters are really dealing with some pretty serious things.
Yeah.
And we didn't even talk about, Corbin Burnson, his role wasn't very big, but it was great that he got to play it. I mean, he was the ultimate bad guy.
Yeah.
In several ways.
He got to play the bad guy, and he was integral to the plot, and he was at the, he was at the climax of the film.
Yeah, exactly. And what more could you want?
So. Well, I don't necessarily know that I want Corbin Burnson's climax, but,
Don't get any on ya.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in a creepy way.
Some kind of L.A. Law.
Yeah. That would be a major league disappointment. No, that's just horrible. I'm sorry. No, I can't do it. All my children. I don't know. I don't know what it is. No, actually, that's not true. It was Young and the Restless, right? Wasn't his mom one of the main actors on a soap opera? Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is all being cut out of the show for being not funny and a horrible attempt at humor.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. So while this is, probably one of our shorter episodes, I love this movie. I don't want to really spoil it for anybody, and I highly recommend everybody watch it.
We don't want to spoil it any more than we already have.
Well, we gave you some lines that are funny, but there's much more funny stuff. I mean, there's more funny stuff in the movie we didn't talk about at all. We didn't even give away the plot, except that, I'm sorry, now you know that both Harry and Perry survive. But that's about it.
One of the funniest parts of the movie, which I won't reveal, but one of the funniest things that happens is with the whole when they're locked together in the room at the mental institute. Yeah, but that to me, I almost died laughing.
Well, okay,
I literally almost died.
I actually have a criticism, and this is the only one I can think of, and that is when they're talking about the Johnny Gossamer books, because both Harry and Harmony have read the Johnny Gossamer books, and they talk about how, this isn't going like a Johnny Gossamer book, because in that book, he'd get captured and tortured, and then he'd shoot like 16 people. And then Harry's like, yeah, 16. Well, spoiler, there's a torture scene, and I was trying to count, but they didn't kill nearly 16 people after that scene. They should have, though. They should have found a way to shoot 16 people.
That would have been funny.
Because that would have just tied that up nicely. But that's the only flaw I could see in the whole thing. And much like an Amish quilt, there should be one flaw. Just, as a sign that you're not perfect. Yeah, and God punished them.
No movie's going to be perfect.
Well, no, and God punished them because they didn't make any money on the movie. Hey, it made its money back, so that's fine. And it actually, because it was a clever script, it actually sort of jump-started Shane Black back into being a major player.
Well, good. I hope he writes a sequel.
Oh.
Of course, we'll never do it. But
I
will.
As long as he keeps writing movies, I will watch those movies.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
In fact, it inspires me to, although he just did the final version of The Last Action Hero. That wasn't his story originally, but he's the one that gets credit for it or blame for it because he's the final writer of it, but of the screenplay. But I want to go watch The Last Boy Scout again to see if that was really any good. I remember it being fine. I don't remember it being special. It's got Damon Wayans in it, right? Was that Adam Sandler and Damon Wayans? So, yeah, highly recommend this movie. I would recommend some people, anybody go out and find the screenplay and read it. I was trying to see if it was available on Audible from the original author, but I'm afraid I would have been disappointed because I'm sure that it was only the plot and all the dialogue was written by Shane Black, so that wouldn't have been cool.
Yeah, and because when the movie opens, it's, you know, in part based on. So I think you would be disappointed. I think, and I say that not having knowledge directly, but that was my apprehensive too, because I thought the same as you. I thought maybe I should go, and then I was like, no, because what's going to happen is it's not even going to be close. They're not going to be closely related. There's going to be a little plot points that I'm going to hate it because it's not going to hold up to the movie.
Exactly. It'll be all the plot and none of the funny or the clever. And that's not what we want.
Right.
So, excellent. Anything else on Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No. I think we're good.
I have some, a little bit of feedback. Connie has suggested a couple of things that I'll talk about in more detail later when I get her actual email. But she's thought of some themed episodes where if we're not into necessarily talking about one particular movie. For instance, she heard in our list of judgment, with my little comment about mom asking if we were going to do, you know, all the Johnny Depp movies. And I sort of laughed at that idea. And she said, well, you know, for Mother's Day, why don't you just do a show about Johnny Depp movies? Like his career, let's say.
Yeah.
So, I know that was a good idea. That could be fun. Yeah. So we wouldn't have to, you know, tie ourselves to one particular movie if we didn't want to.
Well, we wouldn't have to explicate a Johnny Depp movie at length.
Exactly.
A single Johnny Depp movie.
Which may actually do him a service.
Yes. And I like Johnny Depp. I don't dislike him. I mean...
Well, he's good in some stuff, and he has been involved in some movies that were not as successful, let's say.
Sure. And he looks like he smells bad.
He definitely looks like he smells of patchouli and B.O.
In related former Podcastia news... I am currently listening on Audible to a book that I bought about submarines called Red November.
Oh, excellent.
Which is got all kinds of interesting stories about the Soviets and the Americans and their subs, both the diesel and the nuclear, and nuclear, by the way.
Oh, I heard you. I heard you.
Which actually also went into a great deal about the Cuban Missile Crisis so far, which is what the chapter I've just passed. So, anybody who was big on the hunt for Red October, who might want some interesting kind of true history about the sub programs, both the Soviet and the American, it's kind of been an interesting read, if you will. You know, I'm not really reading it, I'm listening to it, but, you know, which, taught me some things about the Cuban Missile Crisis that I had no idea, which glad I didn't, you know, glad probably wasn't alive during that time. Not that anybody knew the gravity of what actually was going on. So
I try not to think too much about what could be going on now just because of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
you'll
find out in 30, 40 years.
Well, yeah, potentially we could have avoided disaster 6 times just today and just didn't know about it.
Sure.
So I'm kind of a big fan of ignorance as far as that goes. I mean, honestly, I think I'd always take the blue pill. Like, who'd want the red pill? You think you want the red pill, but I don't think you want the red pill. If I'm getting the pills correctly.
That's a tough dilemma. I don't know if I'd want to be ignorantly blissful or if I'd actually want to know the truth. And, you know, because then once you know the truth, then you have to do something about it. And I'm lazy.
No, we don't do anything about the truth that we think we have now, so why would we do anything about the truth that we would discover tomorrow? I mean, really. I'm not criticizing you, I'm just being me. I got no problems putting blinders on around actual truth. It's not an admirable quality. I'm almost never the hero in my own story, but still. Which, actually, the Cuban Missile Crisis brings up two movies. 13 Days.
It's a great movie, by the way.
It is a great movie. But even greater movie, we should tackle JFK at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I got the Blu-ray specifically because I like that movie a lot. And whether or not you believe that, you know, what it talks about is true or not, doesn't even matter. As a film, it's a good film.
It's a great film, but I divorce it as having any historical value and being just, I take it as completely just an act of fiction.
Yeah, which is fine. You know, it's the opposite of Tombstone. Well, because Drew and I agreed that we would just take Tombstone as fact.
All right. Well, that is your right.
Yeah. So, you know, it just makes it easier because, you know, all that Old West stuff turns out to be unreliable. In fact, everything is unreliable. Just as a side note, you know, that the pictures that we took in the Pioneer Home with Journey and Aunt Reva.
Yeah.
I showed the pictures to Mom later in the day, and she goes, you know, the one especially with Journey sitting on Reva's lap, and they both look like they're having a great time. It's like, that's not really accurate, because it makes Reva look like she's having much more fun there than she is. And I told her, hey, that's fine. Journey looks like she's having a great time, and she wasn't having a great time either during that visit, so it's perfect. Pictures are lies, too. You know, it's fine. It's lies we can live with. The picture of Journey flying a kite is a pretty great picture, but she is neither flying the kite. I mean, at least it's our kite, but that's the only thing about it that's right, because Kelly's flying the kite, and the kite was only in the air for like 5 minutes because there wasn't enough wind. But it doesn't matter. She will have memories of flying a kite with her mom and dad at the park, you know, for the rest of her life.
Right. All right.
So, with a little Photoshop, you know, I could have my daughter growing up believing that she was born in a manger. And she rode around in camels with Jesus at the fair.
And she discovered America.
Yeah, and she went to a Madonna concert. Whatever. It just doesn't... Anyway, truth is what you make of it.
Wow, you went right off the rails into Creepyville.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's just... So, you got a pick for next week?
Well, I think we should do Malice.
Okay, let's do Malice.
I will warn you, it's a dark movie.
Oh, that's okay. I don't mind dark movies. Like I said, this is all comedy week this week, so it'll be a couple weeks down the road before we release it anyway.
Yeah, Malice is not it has probably my single most favorite Alec Baldwin speech of all time. And I'm not giving you any spoilers. But after you have watched it, I think you will agree with me.
Okay, well, thank you again. And next week, right. Malice.
You've been listening to Not in a Creepy Way. If you have a rant or rave, please send your emails to rants@notincreepyway.com.
Like us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave a comment. Turns out you can leave a 5-star rating and the comment could say your show sucks. And it still makes us happy.
Not in a Creepy Way.